Man, fourth quarter's coming. I'm getting jazzed. Hope you are too. Got some inventory in. Getting ready to send some more. If you've been thinking about growing your business next year, what are you going to invest in? If you don't have a plan, that's a problem. Start making a plan for next year. I know it's getting busy and you got hot and heavy. Plan, plan, plan. I always think of Dan Miller. He always says in November, he comes out with a plan for the following year and he gets rid of some of the stuff he's doing. Well, private label, if you've been thinking about it, Andy's retreat is upcoming in October. And, you know, if you want somebody standing over your shoulder explaining why what you think is a great idea isn't in the Amazon selling world, because, and knowing the real reason, so then you'll have that light bulb moment, this is the kind of event that you might want to consider. So it's expensive. However, it's complete. Literally, you get there. Once you get there, everything is covered. And that's why there's a cost, right? And so you're going to be with a whole bunch of other people that are thinking the same way, that want to grow, that want to learn together. You're going to make relationships you never thought possible, maybe some partnerships, but it's such a great event. If you're interested in it, amazingfreedom.com/retreat, or just private message me and I can forward the information to you, as some people have been asking for. Second sponsor of this show is Seller Labs and Scope. You know, if you heard my examples in the last couple episodes where I was using it for wholesale and then for private label, you know, one of the coolest things about Scope is you can look at a great successful listing and use Scope and you can actually see the keywords that you're using. That's how you learn, right? Now think about that. You actually get to see a successful listing that's working, and then you get to see behind the scenes why. Right? It's a great product and all the pictures are great and all the rest of that jazz, but keywords are critical. How does it get found? And Scope will teach you that. And it's such a great tool. Seller Labs puts it out, so you know it's made well. So it's sellerlabs.com/momentum. We'll get you to the Scope app and you can use that code and save $50. It's an awesome thing. You also get a couple free keywords to use. And I would absolutely suggest you try it and give it a shot. Private message me again. If you want more information, I can do that for you. And finally, Solutions for E-commerce. That's Karen Locker's group. You hear me talk a lot about her because I believe in her. She created some private label listings. Well, not her, somebody on her team did, and they did it wrong. They uploaded, I think it was the wrong pictures, right? And it's like, oh, I caught it, because they sent me a thing saying, hey, here it is, check it out. I'm like, whoa. Rather than freak out, in my mind I was, message Karen, boom. 20 minutes later, it was fixed. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, how did they do that so quickly and turn it around? But that's the serious level, the service that I get from Karen. And I pay her the same as everybody else. Yeah, she pays me as a sponsor, but I pay her the same fees as you do. You save $50 if you buy it through my podcast. So it's Solutions for E-commerce. .com/momentum. Save $50, but she's also going to do an inventory health report for you. That's very valuable. Let's look at your inventory and see why it's not right. What do you need to get rid of? Save some fees and go all in. Use that money to help build a really strong Q4. Q4 is here, and man, I'm so excited about this.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 234, Tanya Sheets. Now, Tanya is a YouTuber, long-time seller, just really experienced. And she goes by Thrifty Treasures out on YouTube and has a ton of videos, over 300, very accomplished. What I love about Tanya, and I pepper her, I mean, I literally pepper her with a zillion questions that are technical, just because I think that her model is so strong for someone to start out in this business. If they're looking to supplement their income, I think that she's evolved over time. And I get it from her. It takes me a while to get to the right question. I didn't ask the right question. But she's basically still doing things the way she did them almost since 2000. So 17 years later, a lot of what she's doing still works and is very effective. That's powerful to hear. And man, she's just so great at it. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. I'm very excited about today's guest. She's kind of getting famous on YouTube with her background, which I think is so smart when you're selling on multiple channels and you're not afraid to kind of hold yourself accountable or have others hold you accountable by putting yourself out there. That's hard to do, but she's doing a really great job with it. Tanya Sheets. Welcome, Tanya.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I appreciate it. Now, you have a what is your YouTube name?
The Thrifty Treasures.
Say it again.
Thrifty Treasures.
Thrifty Treasures. And how many videos have you put out?
I believe a little over 300.
A little over 300. You know, that's so, you know, that's just a lot. I mean, how many years has it been?
It's probably been about 2 years. Okay. Since I've been doing it on a regular basis.
Okay, so you've been consistent. And I think that that's the hardest thing. Would you agree that being consistent, because life is going to happen, right? At least in my world.
Yes.
And you've got a bunch of kids, so life happens for them. That makes it automatically happen for you.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So you sell on, how many channels do you sell on right now?
Well, I sell on eBay, Etsy, Amazon. I do merch by Amazon, and I do some local consignment. And I also have an antique booth.
Because you're not busy enough. Do you also sell, I mean, just make sure you got to get it all out there, either on Craigslist, OfferUp, is it Mercari or something like that too? Or any of those local? Or I guess Facebook yard sales, I guess would be the other one.
Right. I've experimented a little bit with those, but nothing in great depth or anything.
You know, I find it's a time killer. I mean, I've done a few things just because they were mistakes. But I find it's a time killer, selling locally for me. I like to buy, but selling.
Yeah, because you have to schedule to meet up with them, and that takes time out of your day. So I agree with you.
And do you get at least in my experience too, is I get a zillion questions, more so than an eBay. And, you know, it's automatically assumed that the price is going to be lower, right? So if I put it up for $100 firm, it's automatically, would you take $20 for it? Well,
exactly.
No. And then if you don't reply, then they're like back at you. Yeah. So that's my experience. Now, I know there's some people that are really good at it and don't mind tolerating that stuff. But I just think time is a big deal. Now, time in your life is a big deal because you've got a big family, right?
Yes, I have 2 children.
So you've got a lot going on, and they're younger, right? So you've got things going on, right? Their activities become your activities by default.
Right.
So how do you, I mean, I want to go back and get the story of how you got started, but how do you manage? I mean, what you described were a lot of different places doing a lot of different things and then adding a YouTube, kind of an accountability channel on top of it. How do you manage that day to day? I mean, are you rigid? I mean, is your time precious? Every minute blocked out?
Time is definitely precious. And I tell you what, I couldn't do it without a planner.
Okay.
I have a planner that I use that I write stuff in, and I also make lists every day. So that helps a lot.
Do you make a list for tomorrow at the end of today, or do you start your day first thing in the morning creating a list of what I'm going to accomplish today?
I like to make it the night before because it's fresh on my mind. And mm-hmm. I almost sleep better after I've made that list.
Yeah, it's like a release, right?
Yes.
Now, you do a lot of merchant fulfilled shipping, I assume, when you're on those other platforms?
I do.
Okay. And so how do you manage that? I mean, do you go to bed knowing that you have 6 packages to ship or, you know, whatever on each platform? Or is it just, I know I have to ship eBay and I know I have to ship Etsy. I'll check in the morning to see what it is.
Right. I do all my shipping early in the morning.
Okay. So you don't look at it at night to see what it was and wear that overnight?
No, I do it all in the morning, okay, right before I take it to the post office.
I think it's smart because sometimes I dwell on it, at least for me. I sit there and I say, okay, I got these 6 to do here and this platform and 1 here and 2 here. So I wear that at night. Sometimes I'll make the mistake of checking and then it's like all night long I think about it and then I wake up and I'm like, oh, I got to get those 3 out, you know? So, all right, well, that's a better tip. Okay, so planning with a planner, writing down, creating lists. Now, are you consistent 7 days a week doing that, or is that just Monday through Friday?
I would say it's pretty consistent. I mean, I don't take any particular time off, you know, per se, but I've definitely always got my hand in it.
Do you ship 7 days a week generally?
No, definitely not.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I have my handling time set to 2 days on eBay. So I have to allow a little bit of leeway just in case.
So now here's mine, and I don't know how many SKUs you have. I have mine set to 5 days as much as I can. And I know I lose fees. I don't care. It just gives me the time to be able to manage it. And I ship 7 days a week. Literally every single day we ship if we're home, you know, or if we're, you know, at our warehouse. So we cautiously do it. But generally, I get it, you know, shipped the same day. I mean, a lot of times I'll be down there and something will sell and I'll just ship it the same moment, you know. However, right. it gives me, but we literally ship on Saturdays. And now we don't have young kids. And so I will qualify that. It's easier when I can ship on a Sunday and then Monday and Tuesday I can take off because I'm doing something else.
Right.
When you look at your sales, I mean, I don't know how strong you are in FBA, where do you spend the most amount of your time, including listing, buying, preparing, and then shipping?
Unfortunately, I would have to say I spend the most time sourcing.
Really? For which channel?
Probably eBay, Amazon, and Etsy, I would say.
Okay, so you're sourcing equally for those?
Right, because if I go to, say, the thrift store, I'm definitely going to check out stuff I can sell on eBay and Etsy, but I'm also going to look at the books, too. So okay. I like to sell books, yeah.
Okay. So you'll give that. So you're making it an effort. Are you doing any retail arb or online arb or anything like that?
I definitely have in the past. I've experimented with it, but it's nothing I do consistently.
Okay. And are you into wholesale or private label at all for Amazon yet?
I am not.
Okay. So you're not. So majority of your sales then would probably be eBay, I would guess.
Right.
Okay. How long have you been selling on eBay?
I've been on eBay since about 2000.
Oh, wow. So 17 years.
A long time, yes.
You're not that old. Why did you start selling? Was eBay the first place you started selling?
Well, I think like with a lot of people, you end up buying something and then you just eventually end up trying your hand at selling something.
I mean, when you started selling, did you buy something intentionally for that, or was it a mistake or a gift or something that you said, hey, I got to do something with this. Perhaps eBay is a viable option.
Well, I just came across it. I mean, I've always had that entrepreneur, feeling about me or whatever the right word is. And so I would find some things around the house just to start with.
Well, why did you have that entrepreneur thing? I mean, what was it that you knew that you had that bug? I mean, did you see somebody else and say, I want to be like them? Were your parents, your grandparents? Was there something?
No, I've just always been fascinated with the idea of having something and then flipping it for a profit.
Did you have lemonade stands, or did you try to make money when you were a kid, any of those ways?
I can't remember anything in particular, but I'm sure that I did.
Okay. All right. Well, it's intriguing to me that you knew that you had that entrepreneur bug. Did you work full-time for any company or a corporation?
I did. I worked at Oshman's in the advertising department.
Oh, so, interesting. What led you to an auction?
Not an auction, in the advertising department.
The advertising department of what?
Oshman's.
Oh, Oshman's. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I heard auctions. I don't know what that is. So that must be something regional to where you live?
Right, but they're no longer in business now.
Okay, so you worked in advertising. So you were creating ads for them on radio, TV, newspapers, that kind of thing?
Oh, no. I was an accounts receivable clerk.
Interesting. So you were just, you know, an office person. Did you... And I don't mean to downplay that. I don't mean it that way. So, it doesn't sound right. Did you enjoy the rigidity? Because I deal with this right now. Because I was rigid. I'd get to work at the same time. I'd drive the same way. I'd do this. I was very productive. Did you enjoy that rigidity, or is that what drove you away to think that you're more of an entrepreneur? The rigidity you didn't like.
No, I really didn't like it, to be honest. I like being on my own schedule, and I'm not an 8-to-5 type person. I have to get outside. I don't like being confined to walls. So
that was something that, you know, I'm just trying to understand how you get that vibe that you're an entrepreneur, because I don't think I've ever had that vibe. I mean, I get that I want to go to something different. But to believe that you're an entrepreneur, there must be something else that sparked that. Did you see somebody or something and say, that's me? Or is it just the freedom period and saying, I got to find something that allows me? Because you could have been a writer, you could have been an artist. I mean, I don't know if you have those skill sets.
Right.
But I'm just wondering what it was.
I would say It would have to be the freedom.
Okay.
That was that attracted me.
Because I imagine there are people listening who probably go through the same thing and try to figure out, am I an entrepreneur or am I not? And so by realizing that there's a freedom and you're longing for that, that could mean that you are.
Right. And I want to create my own path. I don't want to, I don't want to help build somebody else's business. I want to work on something for me.
Did you see anyone else have their own business and succeed or fail either way? Growing up?
No, not really.
Okay. Well, it's just interesting to me. You're like an anomaly where you didn't, when you listen to my show, most of the people have had a parent or a grandparent or a mentor or somebody who was able to do their own thing and it's very attractive. And then they're like, oh, okay. And then they figured out their lane. So you're an outlier. How did you know you would be good at it? Because you're having a lot of success. I mean, did you know, or is it been hit or miss?
I had success when I first started selling on eBay, and
like an immediate success.
It's been so long ago, I can't remember exactly, but I remember I definitely shipped a lot of packages.
Okay. Did you have an eye? I mean, is that because that's also a gift, right? Is that, I don't know if you're one of those people who could walk into a room and immediately pick out the value. There are people that have that skill set.
I definitely believe that I do have an eye for this, especially considering how many years I've been doing it.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you had it almost from day one. The ability to recognize value, I think, is a trait that certain people have, right? And I think that if you have that, that might be the lane. Is sourcing the best part of the job for you?
Listen, I'm a lady and I love to shop.
Okay.
I'm not going to deny that.
So it is the best part.
Yes.
Is it the most rewarding?
Yeah. I mean, I love the thrill of the hunt, and it's exciting, and for me, it never gets old. I really enjoy it.
Well, but it's interesting to hear 17 years, that part doesn't get old.
It doesn't.
There's a clue. I'm just trying to help people narrow down their lane. If you could full-time source and let somebody else handle all the back room and all the rest of the details, would that be nirvana for you?
It really would.
Okay, so let's talk about the things that aren't so good. Right? The customer service, right? That's challenging from time to time. The listing,
right?
Challenging from time to time, and shipping. When you started 17 years ago, eBay was a very, very different animal, right? I mean, it's night and day from then to now.
Right.
When you were doing, were you scaled way back 17 years ago? I mean, I don't know how long it took you to get to a level that was significant.
I wouldn't say I've really been a full-time seller, more probably a part-time seller, so not scaled a whole lot.
Okay, and so are you still a part-time seller or full-time now?
I would definitely consider myself a part-time. My husband works full-time, and so there's not a whole lot of pressure on me to make those sales.
So how many hours a week do you spend on your business?
Everything?
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely say 8 hours a day. I mean, I'm...
Okay. So even though you're spending 40 hours a week, it's not a full-time business. I mean, it's interesting you describe it that way. That's pretty cool.
I say that just because of my sales. My sales could be better. I definitely, don't list as much as I probably could. But like I said, having children and managing their schedules too, and being responsible for the house, it's kind of hard to juggle everything and get the things done that I need to do.
Okay, here's my world. See if this is fair. Our business is part of our life as much as our life is part of our business. There's no line in the sand. Sometimes the life needs more attention or sometimes the business, but it's become seamless and not in a negative way. Is that where you're at too?
I could agree with that.
Okay. And to me, that's different than what our parents would have grown up with, right? They had that, if they had their business, it wore on them 24 hours, right? Like the Doritos coming off the line, they never stop, right? Where here,
right.
I think it's enjoyable that our business never stops. That's my experience. Would you say the same? You've gotten to that place?
Yeah, definitely. Like you can make money while you're sleeping. I think that's great.
Yeah. Is that when you explain to your friends, because I'm assuming, you know, if you're like us, which I'm assuming you are, when people see that, wow, you get to stay home, you get to buy things, right? As you said, a woman who loves to shop. I'm sure that you have friends that are women that love to shop. And they see and they are attracted to it like, oh, man, Tanya, just can you teach me that kind of thing?
Right.
What do you do? I mean, because that's got to be hard because you make it look easy. That's what I tell people all the time. We don't talk about the things that are difficult in this, or we downplay, you know, how when you do get that bad customer, we downplay how much of it sucks your life out of you, right?
Yeah.
We're just like, oh, yeah, we had a difficult customer. I handled it. But they don't realize the 6 hours of your life you grind and you grind to get through it. We don't talk about that. So you make it look easy. Do others, you know, want to jump in? And then what do you say to them?
You know, really, my friends, they all know what I do, but they've never really asked for me to teach them or anything like that. I mean, I've spoke with like acquaintances that sound like they're interested and, you know, I can give them like pointers to get started and whatnot, but not really a whole lot of my friends, close friends are interested in doing what I'm doing. I don't know why.
That's interesting. But yet I'm going to put words in your mouth because we just had this conversation. You would say that this has become part of your life as a lifestyle, right? To me, that's the attractive piece. Do you consider yourself fortunate because of that?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
To me, what would you do different with two kids that would give you this freedom, right? I mean, what would it be? I mean, can you think of anything else?
I really can't. I really can't.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm sitting back and saying, you know, if I were listening and they're saying, well, why are you peppering her with all these questions? My thinking is that the lifestyle that you created over 17 years, now I want to qualify that. It's taken you 17 years to get to this place of comfort to where you can do what you know what to buy, you know how to list, you know how to ship, you know all those things. It's taken you that long to get here. But once you're here, and yeah, you're not going to make the $1 million, right? You could go be a CEO at a big company and you could put in the time and get to that point. You're not going to get there. But then again, the good news is you're not going to get there because you're able to be part of those kids' lives. And I think that anyone can have this if they're willing to sacrifice, right? I mean, I'm assuming there have been many sacrifices along the way for you.
Right. I mean, nothing is more important to me than being able to be home for my children.
What will you do? You know, I just saw somebody say that they're, you know, they were stay-at-home mom for all those years and the kids went to school and then they all of a sudden have part of their life back and they were like, oh, what do I do? Right. Have you thought about that?
I have. I definitely think that, once they're gone and on their way, I mean, I know I'll have that empty nester syndrome, but at the same time, I feel like I'll definitely be ready to scale things up. Because I'll have more time to commit to it.
And what does scale up mean to you? I mean, is there a number in your mind or is it just more activity?
I would say all of that. I'd like to increase my inventory and maybe look into private label.
But you want to build towards that at some point when it makes sense.
Right. Yes.
Do you feel the longing, the missing out? You know, fear of missing out. Do you feel that now when you see everybody else post, I just sold, you know, $358,000 on selling silicone barbecue gloves? I mean, do you get that fear sometimes by missing out?
No, not at all. I mean, I'd be very happy for them. Yeah, I want to learn from them.
That's very healthy.
Right.
Does your significant other put pressure on you in any way? And you said you don't need them. I mean, you're fortunate that way, but do you feel that pressure from your significant other?
No, not at all. He's very supportive of what I do.
Do you communicate a lot about this with him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talk on a daily basis about what I might have sold or if there is an issue that arises. I always, you know, consult with him and get his advice on what I should do.
Okay. All right. Well, I peppered you with a whole bunch of questions because I assume, that there is a spouse somewhere who's thinking about, hey, is this right for me? Could I make enough money to supplement their income? And my opinion is absolutely yes. Can I not put my kids in daycare? Absolutely yes, because it's so expensive today.
Yes.
My kids pay 30 some odd thousand dollars for daycare.
That's crazy.
It's crazy to me. I mean, I can't even fathom that. And it just blows my mind. Now, they're both professional, and I get all that. But it breaks my heart as a grandfather to see my kids in daycare. And it's like, oh, that 30-some-odd thousand is so much money. And yet, yes, you can stay home and do, if this is your lane, if you like this kind of stuff. And it's not for everybody, right?
Right.
All right, so what I'm going to do is I want to take a break. I peppered you enough. I apologize for that. I just want somebody to hear this to say there is a way. And what I want to do is take a break and come back, and I want to start talking about how you get started on one channel and then how you add other channels, because I think you're a very, very good example of somebody who's selling on multiple channels. And I'm assuming, oh, well, we already said that. eBay is your number one selling thing. But yet you can still sell on Amazon. You could still sell on Etsy. You can still sell on other places. And I think, you know, you can't turn them all on at once, but you can evolve to them. And each one kind of builds on the next one. So let's take a break. We'll be right back. A couple more sponsors I want to talk about today. GoDaddy. That is my domain. That's where I buy all my domains. And I was just thinking about this. As I was recording this, I'm like, I wonder if I can get my 30% savings on the stuff that I already bought. Nah, I bet you not. Hey, they got a deal right now, 30% off of what you're going to buy. All right. So try GoDaddy.com/momentum. Try GoDaddy.com/momentum and get domains. I am a domain buyer. I am. I must admit, if I have a big idea, I check to see if the domain's available. And so I go to GoDaddy, pop it in, and up comes, whether it's there or not. Sometimes it's $24,000 to buy it, but I don't buy those. Anyway, I like to check it. And if I have a good idea, I'll buy that domain. And if you could save 30%, awesome. Save it. Try GoDaddy.com/momentum. Second sponsor in this segment is Grasshopper. If you've been thinking about becoming a little more professional business, I see a lot of people doing Shopify stores now. That means they're going to have customer service. Right now, instead of just paying Amazon, they're going to have to start dealing with that. Or God forbid you're selling on Walmart, you absolutely have to have a customer service plan. Well, guess what? Sound professional without carrying a second cell phone. Put in Grasshopper as an app on your phone. It allows you to add a bunch of extensions. One, you know, press one for customer service, two for sales, that kind of thing. Allows you to forward it to anyone. So you can forward it certain hours of the day to your team overseas to help answer those questions. It's an awesome thing. You're going to become professional, okay? So try grasshopper.com/momentum. Try grasshopper.com/momentum and see how much money you're going to save. $50 off if you sign up through that link. Let's get back into the podcast. Again, you know, sorry for peppering you, Tanya, but I just love the details, the fact that you have so much going on and that you've been able to manage it. The pro tip she gives about inventory, the simplicity of it is so powerful. You know, that a lot of times is the answer, is the simplest way, because you can get mired down in learning how to use inventory systems. If you don't need it, why waste your time? I think her time is better spent sourcing. And you heard her say, that's the best part. That's the most fun. So that's why after 17 years, this isn't a job for her. I love that. And again, I'm really drilling home on this because I think this is a great way for someone to get a supplemental income and yet still raise their kids. I think there's so much power in that. Man, I would just love to see moms or dads stay home with their kids and get them that place and not put them in daycare. I just think there's so much power in that. And man, she's a great example of somebody who's been able to do that for all this time. Love it. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Tanya Sheets, and I peppered her with a million questions. And again, I apologize for hitting you with all those, but I just know that somebody's listening saying, is this a possibility for me? And I think Tanya and I would both say yes.
Yes, definitely.
Knowing what you know now, right, if you had to do it over again, would you do it the same way?
I think so.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty bold statement. I mean, the fact that you're saying, hey, I think I've done it right. I feel like I've done it. Well, no, that's good. I love the confidence in it. It's not easy to be, because I sit back and I think about the things, the missed opportunities, you know, the places that I didn't buy, the big volume I could have bought and I didn't, those little regrets stay with me. But then I think about it, there'll be another deal tomorrow. And I think that's a maturity you get to. Okay, so let's talk about if somebody wanted to start out. What's the best way? Because you give a lot of advice on your channel, and your YouTube channel name is Thrifty Treasures. Is that how they find you when they go out to YouTube?
Right, yes.
Okay, all right. And she's got 300 videos where you talk about what you bought, what you sold, tips, techniques to sell. Fair?
Right,
okay.
Exactly.
Okay, and you show video, so you can actually see, which I think is very helpful in some of those ways. Okay, so somebody wants to start out. Where would you say that they should start out? Amazon, eBay, Etsy?
I would definitely say eBay. I feel like there is a ton of information out there about eBay and getting started. There's books to help you, videos, and you probably have a friend who's doing it. You might not know it, but you probably do.
Yeah, I think that's a good piece of advice, right? You reach out to your circle. Hey, anybody selling on eBay? And then you can, you know, bend their ear. Because I think at least my experience is, there's a million little nuances that you need to figure out. Most of them are easy. Some of them are intuitive. Some are not. And if you can get somebody to help you navigate those, that's a very helpful tool. So yes, starting out on your own, you would start on eBay. And what would you say to somebody? Go out and buy a million things at thrift stores or, you know, look in your house?
Yeah, I would say definitely start around your house, because you don't want to be out any kind of income to start with. And we all have stuff around our house that we probably need to get rid of, like whenever you spring clean. And, you know, even if it's as simple as starting with cleaning out your coffee mug cabinet.
Yeah, I was going to say, give me an example of some of the goofy stuff you've sold over the last month that people wouldn't realize that actually have value.
Oh, gosh. Well, definitely the coffee mugs.
Okay, so a coffee mug. And it's like, wait, nobody's going to buy a coffee mug, Tanya. Come on, right?
Right.
They do, yeah, don't they?
They do, definitely. They're good sellers.
And what makes a coffee mug attractive?
I guess just somebody who might be collecting the content of whatever it is that's on the mug, whether it's, you know, roosters, for example, or Mickey Mouse.
It's funny you say roosters. My grandmother collected roosters, and I remember going as a kid into her kitchen, and she'd have a gazillion of them. Everything was rooster, and then every family member bought her everything rooster.
Right.
But that's a good example, right? That, yes, especially if you have an older one, a family member would be like, what do I buy, Mom? She's got everything. Well, she's into roosters. So therefore, that's actually could be a gift, a used coffee mug, because, you know, she's not going to drink it. She wants it up on her shelf, right? And so there's value in it. And what's a coffee mug sell for?
I like to try and get at least $15 to $20.
Plus shipping or in free shipping?
Definitely plus shipping with coffee mugs, because you wouldn't think that something so small would cost a lot to ship. But by the time you bubble wrap that and put all the packing material inside the box, it gets a little heavy pretty fast.
And if you're shipping to the West Coast, I'm on the East Coast. If you ship to the West Coast, it could be very expensive. I mean, it's not the same price to ship from, you know, when you ship regional, right? If I ship to New Jersey from where I'm in Pennsylvania, it's cheap. When I ship to California, it's always California, Colorado, Florida, and Arizona are very, very expensive for me.
Right.
And so that's a good piece of advice. So do you do free shipping on a lot of things, or were you part, you know, you've been selling so long, you definitely were in that wave. Hey, everything should be free shipping. And then everybody right? I mean, that's the way it's been.
Right. And I've definitely experimented with free shipping. And I actually have some items up right now that are still free shipping, like with jewelry, for example. It's so lightweight that I really don't mind offering free shipping on something like that.
So that's a pro tip right there. So knowing, once you learn the process of shipping, right, once you go through and you understand, hey, up to 3 ounces is the same price regardless, right? And right, so you can add that in, and you know the dollar amount, even though it just went up this past week, I don't think it actually, the first class did, but other ones do. You can kind of base that out and say, oh, I'm going to add $3 because I know it's going to be $3 or under anything there. And you can build that into the price if that makes sense. However, a good example is a coffee mug, because not all coffee mugs weigh the same, right?
Right.
I have had them where they're under a pound, and I've had them where they're 3 pounds, depending on the coffee mug, right?
Yes.
Okay, so a coffee mug's a good place to start. It's a great way to learn to ship, right? Because it's not easy. Right. Have you had them get broken over the years?
Every now and then, but not a whole lot. Another thing that's really great for beginners is books. We all have books laying around our house.
A zillion books. Now, would you put your books immediately on eBay or would you put them on Amazon?
Well, I cross post all of my stuff if I can. So and it might be that I can get more for it on eBay than I can on Amazon. And so that's why I don't choose to use those automated services that, you know, cross post your items on multiple platforms at one time.
You manage that yourself.
Yeah, I like to be in control so I can set the price because it's going to be different for each platform.
And that's a big tip. Now, how do you manage that, though? I mean, how do you know that? I mean, this could be, we might be getting a very big inventory idea here. Go ahead. Give me how you know that this book is listed on both platforms.
Okay, well, it's all old school and it's all done by hand. So I quite literally just put a post-it in the book and, you know, I'll write eBay and I'll write Amazon on it. So that way, whatever platform it sells on, I can look at the post-it and I, you know, quickly know where to go and take it down from.
Okay. Let me, okay.
Now
I was
keep
going
in mind, my inventory is not really huge.
Okay. So me who has 5,000 eBay items listed, it gets to be a challenge. But I thought what you were going to say is, hey, in the book, I have a post-it note that says eBay and Amazon. So when it sells on eBay, okay. Take that post-it note off, and then that means I need to take it down from Amazon. That's not what
right.
you meant. Oh, it is.
No, yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay,
yes.
So you put one in there. Do you? Okay, all right. Well, that's a simple solution, but boy, it's effective, right? And so then you just know it's cross-post. That's a very good idea. I mean, it's very simple to do.
Right.
One. Let me give my little pro tip on this is that the other thing that I do at that same time. So I have a similar process. The other thing I do at that same time is I count the quantity because I tend to buy volume. So if I bought like DVDs, I bought a DVD store. I bought three DVD stores over the years, but I have 42 copies left or something like that. If it's that many, I won't. But if it says I have three left, I literally, when I'm pulling that item off our inventory shelves, I count to make sure I still have three. And
well,
that little extra, because I don't know about you, I have lost inventory over the years.
Yes.
That's a bad thing. And so a simple little inspection at that point, and if you have other people working for you, my wife and I both do this, it helps, that little pro tip there. But I love your simple solution. So there's an expert here telling us, put eBay and Amazon in the post-it note. Do it every single time. So even if it's a book that's only going to sell on eBay, you still put a post-it note in it?
I do, because I don't want to confuse myself. If I put that post-it note in there and it just says eBay, I know I'm done with that. I don't have to do anything else.
And that work done up front, that few seconds of writing a post-it note, putting it in, saves you an enormous amount of grief later on, right?
It really does.
Okay. So there's a lesson. We're back to your organization, your lists. You are that person, aren't you?
I am.
That's good. Okay. That's a very, very strong tip. Give us another one. What else? So books are what you sell. Coffee mugs, how did you file your coffee mugs? Do you have a strong inventory system or you just put all coffee mugs in one area?
I really just put them all in one area. Like I said, my inventory as a whole is not huge. I mean, I think I have maybe about 350 items in my eBay store.
It's still a lot. I mean, it takes up some space, right?
Well, I do have a storage unit.
Okay. So you, and a storage unit's not on your property?
It is not. It's about 5 minutes away from my house.
Is that where you keep 100% of your inventory or some of your inventory?
The storage unit is what's listed.
Okay, so 100% of your inventory is listed. So as soon as you list things today, they get brought down to the storage unit. And so therefore, anything that sells, you go to that storage unit.
Right. Now, for example, I keep my books and my jewelry. I keep all that here at my house. But like the bigger items like shoes and clothes and stuff like that, I'll take that all up there.
Okay. So, and do you have 100% of your books at your house?
I do.
Okay. And so there's another pro tip. You don't mix inventory. So you just know automatically if it's a book, it's at my house. If it's a coffee mug, it's at the storage unit. You don't partially say, well, the books are here up until I stop putting books here because I ran out of space, they're down at the storage unit, right?
Right.
And it sounds silly and it sounds so like, duh, Steve, but that stuff makes it difficult, right? I mean, it sounds to me like you have a very simple system. If it's a piece of jewelry, I just look here and whatever my inventory system is here. If it's a coffee mug, I've got to go down to the thing, right? And so
exactly.
Are you able to write a list or print out something for what you have to ship, or do you pull it up on your phone when you're down there?
I pull it up on my phone, and a lot of times I will just screenshot what I need to get because, you know, I don't get service.
Oh, that's good. That's a pro tip. So you do that at the, there's another pro tip. Okay, that's a good idea. So even if, yeah, I was going to say, what happens if your internet's not working? You're just looking at your photos because we handwrite our list and then we go and pull our items. But boy, that would be a better idea because you have to look at it, right? Because especially at coffee mugs, you know, orange and red start to look the same in the dark. Is your storage unit lit?
It is not. I mean, there's lighting in the hallway, but not within the unit.
Okay. So that's a challenge. And how long have you been working out of a storage unit?
I've had a unit on and off for a couple of years. The first time I got one, I was on the second floor. And I just didn't feel comfortable going up there by myself in the elevator and the hallways and everything. But now I got one on its ground level. And quite literally, I pull my car up to the door and it's like 8 feet to my unit and I'm in and out really fast.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how many packages you're shipping on an average day. I assume Mondays are heavier than probably Thursdays or Fridays, right?
Right.
Do you take to grab your items generally?
I'm in and out of there really quick. I pretty much know where everything is, what area it's going to be in.
I think that functionally, that's a very simple system. Again, you know what items. I like the fact that you keep your jewelry close. It's easy. It's small, right? It's probably organized, right. Very simple. And then you don't have to go to extremes. So are you going to that storage unit 5 days a week pretty much?
No, I guess it just depends on what I'm selling. If I sold something that I need to go get from there, but usually once or twice a week.
Okay. Okay. So you can time it, and hence the 2-day shipping. So you can kind of plan it. Are you, because you're the planner and the organizer, are you listing? I mean, are there days you dedicate to listing and then days you dedicate to shipping and days you dedicate to sourcing?
You know, if I have to be honest with myself, I'm going to say no, I do all of that every day.
Okay. Wow. Okay. All right. I just didn't know if there's a best practice. I mean, looking back, or is that what you don't want because you don't want the rigidity? Are we back to that? You don't want to work in an office.
Definitely.
I think that's a very healthy thing. If it works for you, one of the things, tell me if this is fair. I'm very worried about this becoming a job. I'm very worried about that. And some people would say, Steve, you created yourself a job, right? Tanya, I mean, because we have a huge warehouse. We have a lot of items to ship every single day. I'm very worried, though. I like what you're describing where it's like, hey, I kind of do all of what I want. And imagine that when you find a good source, that becomes your focus for the day, not listing or shipping, right? That fluidity, right. That's what's attractive, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, So we're selling books, we're selling coffee mugs out of the house. We're selling, you know, the other place to look is kids' toys. You know, you don't think there's any value, but Legos are, right, a good example. And girls, Barbies, dolls, American Girl, all that stuff. There's real value there. And in the past, you would have just donated that. I mean, have you seen your friends? I mean, this is a good one. You've been to your friend's house and they say, oh yeah, we just donated a whole bunch of stuff. And they start describing it to you. And in your mind, you're like, oh my God. I could have sold all that.
Yes, definitely that's happened. I mean, I'll have friends give me stuff every now and then. So that's always nice when that happens.
We have friends like, Steve, could you come and look at this stuff before I sell it just to tell me if there's any value? Vinyl records, because vinyl records are hot again. And I have a friend that has 55,000 vinyl records, no exaggeration.
Oh my goodness.
And that's what he does. And so, you know, I buy for him generally. When I'm buying vinyl records, I know what he wants. I just buy them. And so, you know, when I see an opportunity, then they're like, well, can you come and look at it? And then I'm thinking to myself, well, it's kind of a conflict I have. I know he can sell them, and then I know there's value, you know, so I would never lie to anybody. Usually I'm just like, nah, I'm not that guy. You know, if you want to sell them, I'll just take them all, but I don't want to have to go through them, you know.
Right.
Okay, so somebody, we're going back to basics, and we're saying, hey, start on eBay. Start with stuff in your house. Best place to start is coffee mugs. How about a collection, right? If you or a family member collected spoons, or I'm just thinking of something stupid, stamps or coins or fountain pens or vinyl records, that's probably a good place to start too, right?
I definitely would agree with that.
How did you get started on Etsy? Because I'm not an Etsy seller. What was attractive for Etsy for you?
Well, I guess I've been on Etsy since about 2008. And initially, I was just experimenting with some, some bows that I had made for my daughter, handmade items. And then I listed a few vintage things. I just saw it as another place where I could, you know, potentially be making some money, another source of income.
But it took you 8 years to get there. And I think that's the lesson, right? You mastered eBay, you know, ups and down, you sold a lot or didn't, you know, whatever. You figured all that out before you added the second channel.
Right. Well, I was doing, I think I started Amazon like in 2003. So I was busy with eBay and Amazon. And then I discovered Etsy. So I added that to the mix.
Okay. So that was later though. Because I think a lot of people hear that, you know, you're selling in all these things. I need to jump right on them all. That's bad advice, right?
Right. Take your time.
So you're selling on eBay, you add Amazon in for books, I assume. Books, DVDs, CDs back then.
Yeah, media.
Media. All merchant fulfilled.
Yeah, initially, for sure.
Right, initially. And then you get to FBA later on. And then you add Etsy. You still sell on Etsy? Do you still sell homemade stuff? Or are you really down to the collectible kind of stuff?
I'm really down to the collectible kind of stuff.
How do you determine that something should go on Etsy as opposed to eBay? Or are they both on both always? Generally?
On both, generally always, especially if it's vintage. If I list a vintage item on eBay, I'm definitely going to cross-post it on Etsy as well.
At the same price or a different price?
Usually at the same price. I might ask for a little bit more on Etsy, but not always.
So if it's a coffee mug, what are you coding it when you put it in the storage unit?
Well, again, I would just slip a little post-it in there that says eBay/Etsy.
Man, that's such a simple, I mean, you solved an inventory complicated problem with such a simple solution. But a lot of times that's the best way, right? When you're starting out,
right.
Oh, Tanya, what kind of inventory system do you use? What software do you use? No, it's a post-it note. Yeah, it's this newfangled, it's this really cool little package. It's little yellow slips of paper. And actually, they're not even yellow anymore, right? They could be colored.
Exactly.
Have you thought about that, you know, getting as the complications, you know, as things get more challenging, right? Have you thought about dealing with that and then talk yourself out of it because it's like, it's working?
I mean, I've definitely thought about it, but I feel like I'm so old school and I'm stubborn and set in my ways. So this is just what has always worked for me. And unless I scale up considerably, it's probably what I'll always do.
Yeah. When you think about the number of mistakes, you know, and I think about that a lot, you know, the number of, you know, we ship thousands of items and the number of mistakes are really infinitesimal because what happens is, you know, usually it's an anomaly. Somebody changes, or eBay changes a whole bunch of their database, right? It messes you up a little bit and then you get a little glitch, but then you process differently. And then it's like, okay, problem, found it, fixed. Okay, move past it. So that little mistake was a blip and you adjust, right?
Right.
You don't have to, I mean, when you think about what you're doing now versus 2000, how different is your business, your process?
Well, I would say I definitely have a lot more inventory now.
But is what you do more similar to what you started with in 2000 than it is dissimilar? The basis.
I would say it's still similar.
Yeah. I mean, 17 years, a good piece of what you do is still the same.
Yes.
Right. So you don't have to change, continue. It's like small changes.
Right. I can agree with that.
Okay. All right. So somebody's starting out on eBay, things are going well, they start to have some success selling out of their house. How do they start getting to the next level? Where's the best place to buy next, would you say, in your experience?
I mean, like as far as learning
sourcing.
Sourcing? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, definitely the local thrift stores and garage sales, to me, are where you can acquire a lot of inventory at a really low price.
So garage sales are cheaper than thrift stores, or depends?
I, For me, I would definitely say that garage sales are cheaper.
Are you a bundler or a individual item buyer?
I would say individual.
Okay. So you look and you see that one mug. I'll take that. How much is that? Boom, I'll buy that. Oh, and then you go over here and you see a shirt or whatever. Oh, I'll buy that.
Oh, you know, okay. For garage sales, yes. I definitely bundle at garage sales.
Okay. So garage sales, you'll just put a pile together and then say how much for the pile?
I will do that, yes.
Do you make an offer or do you let them make you an offer?
I let them make me an offer first.
Is that uncomfortable for you?
No, not at all. Because once they give me that number, then I know what kind of room I have to negotiate with.
So I'm just trying to think of somebody who's new at this. When you go to a yard sale, how many items do you buy? And I know this is a stupid thing to say because it could be one, it could be 100. I mean, but realistically, I mean, you've been doing this long enough.
Mm-hmm. Per garage sale, maybe 3 to 5 items.
Okay. So 3 to 5 items. That's what I was going to say, 2 to 3. So let's just say 4. When you go up there, are you pricing them in your mind individually and then dividing it by the number to get to an average cost to say, yeah, $3 a piece or $12, right? Or,
right.
I mean, how do you approach that to know what you should pay? And is that a line in the sand for you?
It is. I would definitely say I have an idea of what the items are costing me individually and what I want to offer. But, you know, if somebody has like $5 on a coffee mug at a garage sale and versus what they have like on it at the thrift store, a lot of times, like in my mind, I'm thinking in my head, I will pay more for it at the thrift store than I will at the garage sale. Do you know what I mean? Like,
because you know you can sell it, right? So you know the retail value. Right. And I think that's a good point. So you know that you can get $35 for that, right? If it happens to be the mug, right? You're willing to pay $5 or $6. However, at a yard sale, it's a little more, you don't have that certainty.
Right.
Do you look up things on your phone at yard? Are you one of those people?
I usually don't. I'm usually in a big hurry when I'm garage selling. I'm in a hurry to get to the next one. And like we talked about, I kind of have an eye. And I'll also take chances, too, if things are, you know, cheap enough.
Right. If that mug was 50 cents, is that a chance for you? Right? I mean, right? I mean, think about it, right? I mean, worst case is you lost 50 cents and you move on. But if you're right, versus the $5, that's another $4.50 less fees that you put into your pocket profit-wise.
Exactly. And I can always, you know, offload something in my antique booth if I can't sell it online.
Oh, nice. Because I want to get there because I wonder how profitable antique booths are. You're going to be a good example of that. Okay. So garage sales seems to be a very good place to buy 3 to 5 items. And how many would you hit on a given weekend?
I'd say probably about 20, 25.
Okay, so you're buying scale, volume. I mean, you could buy 50, 60 items in a weekend if you're not careful.
Yeah, I can. I have to watch it.
Yeah, can you get that many listed?
No.
I was going to say sometimes. Well, but if you're buying them for multiple places, so if you're buying them for, what percentage of the inventory do you buy intentionally for your antique booth?
Gosh, if I had to put a number on it, I'd say maybe 30 to 40%.
Okay, so pretty heavy. I mean, so that's, and they're easy to list, right? You put a price tag on it, clean it, put a price tag on it, bring it down and put it up on the shelf.
Right.
Okay, so they're probably a lot easier than, you know, cleaning it, researching it, you know, taking pictures, creating a listing, doing that whole thing. That's a lot more work.
Right, but I still have to research it.
Right, well, that's true. Do you, when you're creating a listing for eBay, is it the same process for Etsy? Same set of photos, same general description?
Exactly. I copy and paste everything.
Do you? When you create an eBay listing, how much more time is it for you to create that Etsy listing at the same time?
Gosh, I would say maybe 3 minutes, okay. 3-4 minutes tops.
And do you list every single thing that goes in eBay that on Etsy or no?
Just the vintage items.
Okay, so just the vintage items. So again, when you're making that determination, now do you list them also in your antique booth? Do you store them in your antique booth? Have you ever done that?
No, definitely not. That would be a nightmare waiting to happen for me because my antique mall is probably about 15 minutes away. It's not near as close.
Okay. Okay. So there's no, I've seen people, I've heard of people doing that.
Yeah.
And
I then have
they, yeah. And it's like, ooh, I'm with you. Cause how would you, my luck would be, they would sell the same day, the same hour,
right.
You know, and it's just like, no, you know? Okay. All right. So, I think that's a very pro tip there too, is once you determine an item can be sold on multiple channels, do the same work right up front at the same time. Because I assume the same thing is done with books, right? If you're listing a book on eBay and on Amazon, it's very simple to, I mean, but listing books on Amazon is simple. I mean, it's seconds.
Right. Yes.
Not on eBay, because you got to take the pictures and stuff. But
right. And you don't want to do the research twice either. So it's just best to take care of it right then and there while all the information is fresh on their mind.
When you're pricing a book to sell on eBay and on Amazon, are they generally priced about the same too?
No, definitely not. If there are, a lot of times it will be that there might be a lot on Amazon, but not as many on eBay. And the person's picture might not be near as good as I feel I can, you know, make my listing look. So I feel like I can ask more on eBay sometimes if the inventory isn't there, and then vice versa for Amazon too.
Right, but you're like you're describing it. You get to show yours in the best light possible. You're showing all the pictures of your product,
right?
Where, because when you go on Amazon, you're not certain. What does that mean? Acceptable? You're like, ooh, is that good or bad? Right? Because you've seen extremes.
Right.
But I mean, I've sold a lot of books too. And it could be underlined and highlighted and all the rest of that jazz, or it could be pristine. And it's just some people just like to list them. And so it's a gamble.
Right.
Okay. So I think that's really strong. I think that back to the way it would be, start out on eBay, create some listings, selling some stuff around your house. Now you add in sourcing at yard sales, garage sales, whichever you want to call them, and then perhaps thrift stores. Thrift stores tend to be a little more expensive than yard sales, right? Generally.
Right.
They're picked over. There's a lot more competition at most thrift stores, not all, don't you think?
Oh, I agree. Yes.
Is that, I mean, do you buy as much at a thrift store as you used to? Is there the ability, I guess would be the question, is the ability to buy like it was 15 years ago the same? And then B, and I know this is a stupid question, but it's going to be like, duh, Steve. After 15 years, you know what not to buy, I'm assuming.
Right. I would say that things are definitely different now because I feel like it's the market, I feel like reselling is saturated right now. There's a lot of people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the opportunities to find something really great are not there as frequently as they probably would have been, say, 15 years ago. But I definitely feel there's still a lot of good stuff you can get. Like, for example, whenever I go, and if one of the workers are wheeling out a bin, I will walk right over there. And, of course, I'll ask first, do you mind if I look in the bin? And they almost always say, you know, go ahead. And so that's another great way, too. Sometimes what I purchase doesn't even have a chance to hit the shelves.
So you're the first person buying that or seeing it.
Right. I mean, I will definitely go check it out.
And how often are you in thrift stores a week?
You know, I've cut back a whole lot, but I would say there is one Goodwill that is close by my house that I definitely hit up every single day. I don't hit all the Goodwills in my area.
Wait, 5 days a week? 5 days a week you're in that Goodwill?
I'll pop in there just to see what they have. I might be in there 10 minutes. I might be in there 30 minutes, but I'm definitely going to pop
kidding.
In there.
Wow.
It's like an addiction.
So it's and hence the reason, you know, and I describe it this way. This is my little tip for somebody. If you're looking to see, you know, because old stuff doesn't necessarily mean it's going to sell, right? You see, oh, it's antique, it's going to sell. Well, no, go to an antique mall, right? And we can talk about your antique mall, but go there and start to look. And when you see 17 Red Ryder mugs, you'll realize they're not so collectible because you happen to see the same thing in the next booth and then in the next booth and the next booth. The bell should be going off. That's not unique. There's abundance, right? And so therefore, if there's abundance, right, supply and demand would tell you there's an oversupply or a lot of supply, that the demand probably isn't as strong. You might want to spend your money elsewhere. And to me, not even buying anything, walking through those places can give you some very, very good perspective.
Right.
All right, let's pause for a second. Your son came home, didn't he?
I think that he's probably in the driveway. I'm coming in the laundry room, though, and closing the door.
Sorry. Sorry about that. Okay, we're almost done. Sorry I'm peppering you so many, but I just think it's, you know, when you get somebody who's done this, and I think the way you're doing it is such perfect. So, okay, I'm going to come back on it. All right, so let's talk antique malls, because you're one of the few that I've interviewed that still utilize an antique mall. And what's cool about it is antique mall doesn't necessarily mean it's an antiques only, right?
Right, definitely.
Yeah, that's evolved, right? It's not, some places are very strict about it, but generally they're not like a flea market, but there's definitely, there's a looseness to that term antique, right?
Yes, definitely. And if somebody wanted to get into an antique booth, I would say that would definitely be a question you might want to ask the owners. How strict are you that the item has to be an antique?
Yeah.
Because like my mall, for example, I could be hand making bows and selling them in my booth if I wanted to.
So you could be selling wholesale pairs of socks, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
I
you
sure
could buy,
could.
Right. I mean, and there's value in that, because in your world, what you bought, maybe it was a mistake for eBay or Amazon or whatever when you do the research, but you have another avenue, right?
Exactly.
No matter what, you can put it up on your shelf. It might not sell, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't cost you more to put an item in there, right?
Right. And even if it doesn't sell there, I'll take it to a consignment shop and I'll try my hand there.
Oh, okay. So let's take it all the way. This would be a perfect flow chart. You bought the item, you thought it would sell on eBay/Etsy, if it's vintage, or eBay/Amazon, depending if it's a book or media or whatever, or maybe even Etsy, Amazon. I guess that could happen. Maybe vinyl. Vinyl would be a good example.
Right.
That could work
yeah,
on all three.
Definitely.
Vinyl could work on all three. So that item, okay, didn't work there. Now I bring it to the antique booth, knowing that we can try that, right? Took the listing down from the others. Okay, didn't sell there. Now I can take it to a consignment shop. And if it doesn't happen, at least our local consignment shop donates it for you. You
exactly.
don't even have to do anything.
Right. I don't want it back. You can go ahead and donate it.
Okay. So you've taken it all the way through the chain, and then you go back to Goodwill, and there it is again, and you're like, ooh, I'm going to buy that. that's the risk, because I've done that. I bought the same thing. I'm like, wait a second. Didn't I sell this thing? And it never sold. And yeah. Okay. So the antique malls, my experience is they're expensive, and they don't sell a lot, and it's hard to barely make your profit or the amount of fees back. That's been my experience. Is that your experience?
No, not at all. I really don't even pay that much for my booth. It's probably about a 5x10 size, but my husband and my grandpa built me shelves. So I have shelving when you walk in the booth on either side. So I have a whole lot of room to display items. And I feel like the smalls really helped pay my rent. My rent is only $90 a month. So, I feel like that's a really good, you know, price. It's not a whole lot. So it's feasible.
So it's about $90 a month. And can I put you on the spot and ask how much you sell a month there?
Right. Well, I've definitely had better months than others, but I usually average anywhere from $200 to $300.
Okay. Okay. So that's good. Okay. So, and the rest of it is yours then. So you're getting back a couple hundred dollars that, generally, 70% of it, you didn't buy for that mall, right? I mean, I think we already said about 30% of what
right.
you buy is there. So that 70% came from other channels that just didn't sell for whatever reason.
Right. I mean, you know, doing what I do, there's no reason for me not to have an antique booth, because going to garage sales and thrift stores, I'm always going to come across items that are too big to ship and that would be perfect for the booth.
Right. You know, the thing I go to, because back to the accounting, I'm an accountant by trade. And so I immediately say, okay, she's clearing a couple hundred dollars. Therefore, that pays for her storage unit. Cha-ching, right? Covered. That
right.
expense is covered. Overhead costs are covered. Shipping supplies and things like that. So there's a good reason to have an antique booth right there, is that covers your overhead. And therefore, you then, you know, you don't have to absorb it in your other channels. That's to me how I get through that stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, that makes perfect sense.
Right.
Knowing what you know now, have you thought about opening up a second antique mall booth somewhere else?
No, and I have tried having a second booth at the mall I'm located at now.
Mm-hmm.
And that went over probably for about, I tried that for about 3 months, and it just wasn't working for me. it required more time than I really had to put into it to make it work.
How much time do you put into your existing antique booth in a month, would you say?
Probably only about 4 hours tops.
Okay. Wow.
And that might even be a little, a lot. So
I'm just thinking 4 hours. And as you're saying that, did it take you that, how long did it take you to get to that place? How long have you been in the antique mall?
I'm coming up on my 3-year anniversary.
3 years. How long did it take you to get to that selling level?
I'd say probably about a year.
Okay. So about a year, 4 hours a month, probably, it was probably heavy then fully. And then you've evolved since then. Okay. I love it. I think that that's a very smart idea. I think it's a very simple thing to do. Have you seen more people in the selling community talking about that, adding on that because they got to get rid of their inventory?
I really haven't. You know, there's not a whole lot of talk about people actually doing it. There's a lot of people interested in it, but I don't see a whole lot of people actually following through and doing it.
Are you able to get, I'm going to say yes, but I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. The inventory, the FBA inventory you don't sell on Amazon, for whatever reason you call it back, have you been able to sell some of that in your antique booth?
Definitely.
Okay.
I have a whole bookshelf in my antique booth, and I've got, books and DVDs and CDs. And also what I'll do with some of that FBA inventory that I don't end up relisting as merchant fulfilled or in my booth, I'll take it to Half Price Books.
Okay.
And they'll buy it and just flat out give me cash for it.
And Half Price Books, is that a website or is that a store?
It's a storefront. Yeah. And they sell all kinds of media, books, records, CDs, DVDs.
Is it like a Second and Charles kind of place like that?
I don't know what that is, but they sell new stuff and used stuff.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a mixture.
Okay. I think that must be regional to your area. I don't have one in my market, but we do have a Second in Charles, which I think is similar where they, they sell that kind of thing. Okay. So there's another good tip too. So when you're done with your FBA inventory, you could sell it on Merchant Fulfilled, right? So you can convert it to Merchant Fulfilled. You can put it on eBay. You can put it on Etsy, depending on what it is. You could put it in your antique mall, or then you can completely get rid of it by taking it to Half Price Books, and then again, or consignment. And then if they don't sell, then they just donate it, right?
Right.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Well, you know what? I sit back and I think about, it sounds complicated, but it sounds like you've evolved to a very cool place. It doesn't sound like you have a lot of responsibility at the tail end. It sounds like you figured out a way to get it all the way through and then wash your hands of it and move on. I think that's very, very healthy. You don't sound like you have death piles forever, one way or the other. Is that reasonable?
Right. But listen, I definitely have my share of death piles, but I work on them.
But those are things to get listed.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Not unsold. All right. Well, man, oh man. Okay. So if somebody has follow-up questions, they need to go to Thrifty Treasure. So YouTube Thrifty Treasures to start watching videos, because you're talking about what's selling, what you bought, and how to do it better.
Right. Yes.
Okay. All right. Best advice you would give somebody. So I want to close, and then also best way to get in touch with you. Is that the best way there to, if they have a question, just ask it on YouTube or private message on Facebook, or what do you think?
Sure. Either way, YouTube or Facebook. I have a personal account, but my reseller account is Tanya Thrifty Treasures, I believe.
Okay. I'll have to put that on there. Okay, so the goal of the podcast is to help people move forward, and I peppered you with a gazillion technical questions just because I still believe that you've got a skill set that you've evolved to, and I think there's a lot of utility there that somebody can pick up on. But the best advice you would give somebody to move forward on their business today?
I would say just to start. So many people have so many questions that they ask. And I would say, just start, even if it's just with one item around your house. And if it takes you a week to list it, that's okay. Just start.
Hmm. Okay. All right. Man, I wish you nothing but success. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great interview. Great person. I love that she's evolved into that. I think there's some things I'm going to take a look at. I've stayed away from the antique malls just because my experience has been they've been expensive and this and that, but she's got me rethinking it. Maybe I ought to consider moving some inventory that way. I think that's something that my wife and I will talk about. Consider it for yourself. And if that works for you, send me a note. I'd love to hear more about that. I just think that you know, any way you can get rid of inventory in a reasonable way, you can kind of control it, I think is very healthy. So ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.